Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. I am your co-host, Steve Kim, from the city of Los Angeles, and joining me once again, pinch hitting for Gabriel Montoya, who's attending to some personal business, is Mr. David Duenes. David,
cheers. Thank you guys for having me back on. I appreciate it, Steve.
Folks, we are here on for 90 minutes, going into overtime, if needed, all the way up to 9 p.m. Eastern time. So crack open a cold Zima or three. Sit back and enjoy the ride. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. We'll take these calls in about 20 to 25 minutes. And if you want to send a tweet, you could do so at Steve UCN Live. But let's get started with round number one. It's the PBC on CBS live from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, for the WBA and WBC welterweight titles. Keith Thurman takes on Danny Swift Garcia. Your co-features, Erickson Lubin takes on Jorge Cota. And then a light heavyweight rematch from years ago, or actually not a rematch, but a pretty good matchup, Crossroads veterans, Andres Fonfara and Chad Dawson. Dave, Thurman Garcia, your thoughts on the fight?
I got to tell you this. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me about this fight here. Is can Danny Garcia pull off what you think is going to be an upset? And I got to tell you this, that if you look at Keith Thurman, what we've seen last of him is he's a pressure guy and he can be hurt. Danny Garcia, have we seen him get hurt? Have we seen him being the guy that can be versatile? We absolutely have. So I got to tell you, Steve, I'm picking Danny Garcia to be the guy being versatile and being the guy that can hurt Keith Thurman. Am I wrong? We will find out.
You know what? Scooch over. Scooch over, because I'm on that upset bandwagon. Keith Thurman, according to the odds makers, is about a 2.5-1 favorite. That number actually surprises me, given the fact that Garcia is undefeated and that Keith Thurman has been completely inactive. Danny Garcia has good, solid tools. I know that Keith Thurman has faster feet. He could hit on the fly. Might be a better pure puncher at 147. But what really tips things in the favor of Danny Garcia, in my view, is very simple: activity. Danny Garcia has not exactly been Henry Armstrong, but last year he at least fought twice. Keith Thurman only fought once, and he's been inactive since June 25th when he took on Sean Porter, who, by the way, Sean Porter still doesn't have a fight lined up. And if you go back the last 3-4 years, Keith Thurman, I don't even think, has fought 5 times. There's an old saying, rust don't sleep. And
no.
Let's be very honest about this. Keith Thurman, I think, has been a victim of the PBC logjam and just how they've tried to inundate the market. When you sign 250 fighters, it's great in theory, except there will be a sacrifice to be made by everybody. Keith Thurman might be the better pure welterweight, might have better speed, has more power. I don't know if he's as good technically or fundamentally as grounded as Danny Garcia. So, Mr. Duenes,
no.
I'm with you on that.
I
got a
question. But let me just add this really quick. Because of the fact of the matter is that Luis Collazo was able to hurt Keith Thurman by the body. Okay, he tagged his body, you heard him. Robert Guerrero, who we all know doesn't have good footwork, doesn't have good head movement, was able to hurt Keith Thurman. I'm looking at Danny, and Danny may not have the best defense in the world, but we've seen him. We've seen him be mobile. We've seen him be able to move from big punchers, and we've seen a little bit more. Where Keith can come fall, he falls into the whole, you know what, let me prove something. That may be a problem.
Dave, you know what I've noticed about Keith Thurman, who at one point was one time, and he was one time getting out of there with hard, solid power punches? I was ringside, and this had to be December of 2013. He was one of the main support bouts to Marcos Maidana, Adrian Broner. He was matched with Jesus Soto Cross at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. And in the first 10 to 15 seconds, they came to the center of the ring, and Soto Cross windmilled a right hand that absolutely buzzed the Thurman. Now, Thurman, to his credit, rebounded, took control of that fight, ended up stopping Soto Cross. From that point on, though, Keith Thurman has really scaled back the aggression. He's not the all-out kamikaze or the kill or be killed type of mentality that he was known for early in his career. That, to me, was a very, very striking moment in his career where he changed. It didn't necessarily get worse, but he changed his mentality, which then changes how he physically approaches a fight. I think that's an issue to this day. I've always said when the young fighters get clipped for the first time, they can go in two directions. It doesn't faze them and they can get better, or they adjust, not always for the benefit of the fans. Taking a look at this undercard, I think Erickson Lubin, Dave, I think he absolutely circles and outclasses Jorge Cota. I think this is a bit of a layup. Erickson
yes.
Lubin certainly seems to be one of the favorite children of the PBC and Al Haymon. Who do you like between Fonfara and Dawson? I think for Dawson, this certainly has to be a must-win situation. And for Fonfara, who I favor in this fight, there are questions, Dave, given the fact that last time we saw him, he was getting shockingly iced in one round by then relatively unknown Joe Smith.
I think that the whole thing is this, that like you just mentioned right now, Joe Smith, everybody thought that Joe Smith was just a guy that was relatively a blue-collar guy. And you have to worry about that. You know what? The only thing that he's going to go back to is being a blue-collar guy. That happened.
Yeah.
It happens in boxing. Now you got to take it into consideration. Does Fonfara come back and go, hey, man, let me do my job again? Let me take it more in seriousness? Absolutely. So it's a better fight. That's what I got to say. It's a better fight.
Keep this in mind. Andres Fonfara is no longer being trained by Sam Colana. He is now under the tutelage of Virgil Hunter. So we're going to see if there's any real adjustments or changes made. I get the sense, even with that last fight being the disaster it was in Chicago, I'm a big believer in what's in the gas tank. We are at least 2 or 3 years removed from a good version of Chad Dawson, unless he's Ponce de Leon and found the fountain of youth. I don't know. I still think Fonfara has much more left.
You know, when you have the king of whispers, I got to question it. You know, I like Virgil, but at the same time, you have to have somebody that is going to mess in what you when you dish out. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, you go back to Bernstein, you go back to any trainer, you have to have three or four fights underneath that person where you're going to see results, Steve. So
there is a theory. There's a thought that anytime you have a new trainer, for it really to take shape is at least three fights and three training camps. Now, he's been in Oakland in that Bay Area for at least 6-7 months. I've seen a lot of his stuff on social media, stuff that is tweeted out by people close to him. But you're right. Until you face live bullets in a regulation prize fight, you really don't know how much of an effect any trainer has on a fighter. And I've always felt that Fonfara, at his best, was a guy that worked in volume and was much more offensive than defensive. And Virgil Hunter, whether it's fair or not, have gained a reputation as more or less a defensive specialist with the likes of Andre Ward. So we'll see. Is this a good fit?
Well,
between Andrej von Farah and Virgil Hunter?
You know, I just had right now on Around the Ring, which is going to come out later this week, Kelly Pavlik, and he mentioned something about Virgil Hunter being part of Daniel Jacobs. And he said this is one thing he said. He goes, look, when you're a 12 years profession, there's not much you can change. It takes 4 to 5 fights for you to change whatever you're doing. And perhaps at that time, if you cannot accept what is being thrown at you by a new trainer, guess what? You're just the same old fighter, Steve. So that being said, I'm not too confident.
You know, going to the Jacobs situation real fast, and we'll certainly talk about that in the next week or two. What's going on there in Oakland? There's that old phrase, 2 and a chefs can spoil the stew. There's a lot of hands in that pot as it relates to Danny Garcia as he prepares for Gennady Golovkin on March 18th at Madison Square Garden. Real quickly, Danny Garcia, from what I know, is going to be trained as usual and cornered by his father, Angel Garcia. I know certain people are saying, will the New York State Athletic Commission pull his license? Dave, I don't like Angel Garcia. I don't like what he stands for. I think he's the village idiot. I think he represents the lowest common denominator of society. However, for a long time, we placated this. We enabled it as a sport. And largely, much of what he says, I believe, is harmless in the grand scheme of things. And this is boxing. This is not tea. This is not chess. And if you want to suddenly suspend a guy for being politically incorrect or saying inflammatory things, I think you are opening up a Pandora's box. And I think it would be a very, very unnecessary precedent. I say let Angel Garcia work the fight. I don't even think it's a question.
Well, you know, it's great that you mentioned this because, like I said, I had Kelly Pavlik on Around the Ring, and he mentioned a great point. The thing is this, do we stop guys of their right to speak up? Do we stop guys that, you know, politically, do we want to hear it? But at the same time, this is their right. Give them that chance to have that right. Now, what you can do is say, I'm not going to watch the fight. I'm not going to do this. And you know, Kelly Pavlik made a great point. He said it's going to hurt his son in the long run. It is going to hurt his son in the long run, you know. But at the same time, he said we cannot censor people wanting to talk their mind. You know, whether we don't like it, whether it's stupid, we cannot do this. And I agree with that, Steve. I just can't do that.
Wow. Kelly Pavlik, voice of reason. Never thought I'd say that, but I agree. There's a thing called the First Amendment. The other issue is, again, people say, no, we need to have decorum. You know what? Part of the fun of boxing is the zaniness. And let's say Freddie Roach, who's been over the edge at times. We remember what happened with Macau, with Alex Ariza and a certain reporter. He said a lot of stuff that if you go by this sudden standard that everybody now has to stick out their pinky finger while sipping their tea, again, be careful the new standards that you want to employ. And in defense of Angel Garcia, you know, much of what he does, I believe, is a troll. I think he's playing a role like a classy Freddie Blassie or a Bobby the Brain Heenan that, listen, if you want to call me a racist, fine, I'm going to give you what you want. And I think he's two-legged human clickbait. Listen, I really don't know the guy that well. I've never really met him. But we know what he is. And if Angel Garcia is not allowed to work that corner this week, and I don't know if that's even being discussed, I think it would be completely unfair to Danny Garcia. Now, I will say this. I do believe that the powers that be, the promoters or Al Heyman and the commission, I think they should take Angel Garcia aside and say, Angel, just pull back a little bit. Let's pump the brakes. You're overshadowing the fight and not necessarily in a good way. Let's try to behave with a modicum of class, at least until Saturday night. Anyway, moving on. The PBC on Fox from the Legacy Arena in Birmingham, Alabama. Your main event, It was Deontay Wilder defending successfully his WBC heavyweight title against Gerald Washington. Wilder's now 38-0, 37 knockouts. And for the vacant IBF title, we have a new champion, Jared Swift Hurd, comes back and he rallies and he stops Tony Harrison in 9. And then a heavyweight shootout to begin the battle or the night. Dominic Brazil comes off the canvas and stops Izzy Ogonu in 5 rounds. And then they had a walkout bout at the Westin in Birmingham. We'll talk about that more later. Dave, Deontay Wilder, I know what he is. We know how flawed he is, late start in boxing. Here's the problem with Wilder, who has the proverbial eraser. Since the time he's become a belt holder, Dave, he's gotten worse. That's alarming.
It is alarming because the fact is that, you know what, he's the wild card for Olympian. And we pull for him. He did the thing. But Steve, at the same time that, you know, Stardom has a lot of problem involving the fact that you may be the, you know, American heavyweight champion of the world. We got people right now. I got people right now arguing with me on the Leaving the Ring Gmail to the Twitter telling me that either I'm a racist or the fact that I'm not being objective to what he has done.
Well, let me guess. You're hating. You're hatering.
Yes.
You're hating, dog.
I'm a hater.
Right?
You know.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I got the hater grade. You know what I mean? And it's terrible that's how things are, you know, falling down. When, you know, let me ask you this. When's the last time you've seen a heavyweight have that bad of a footwork? Well, you sit back and go, this guy's going to be great. This guy's going to be good. I've never seen that.
Let me just say this. As I'm seeing Larry Holmes and Evander Holyfield ringside on Saturday night,
right?
I guarantee you both those guys were saying, if I was just 5 years younger, not 50 like Larry Merchant, I could beat any heavyweight that we saw tonight. Deontay Wilder is a very good athlete. He's got electric nuclear power in the right hand. But everything else, for lack of a better term, is a hot mess. And I really believe, and I got to chart this, but this has to be among the worst 5-fight title defenses of any heavyweight champion in the history of boxing. From Gerald Washington to Eric Molina to Johnny D from France, to a very faded Chris Areola. Proof's in the pudding. And are we projecting ahead to Anthony Joshua? Yes, but sometimes the eye test is the only one you need. Anthony Joshua, in my opinion, I think is far ahead of Deontay Wilder technically in his delivery of punches, his footwork, his balance. Now, is he a little bit chinny from what we saw with Dillian White? Yeah, but you know what? It happens. I saw Harold Sconyers, a journeyman, deck Deontay Wilder to a point at the Fantasy Springs. He literally had to be saved by the bell. But Deontay Wilder, you look at that record on paper, 38-0, 37 knockouts. You're like, wow. That is till you actually watch the fight. And here's the reality, Dave. He's now 31 years old. I don't know how much better he's going to get fundamentally from this point forward.
I don't know. I mean, that's the argument right now. You know, if we look at everything that he's done, I mean, his balance is very bad. I watched it. We had people in Twitter, Instagram that were like, you know, throwing out certain things that showed how bad that is. So are we haters or are we being realistic about the fact that Deontay Wilder, he may be a bomber, but he bombs at himself every time he steps in the ring. What is going to happen when he steps in with somebody who has a good jab? What's going to happen when he steps in with somebody who has a good, you know, boxing posture? I got to tell you.
Dave, I tell you what was really alarming. Gerald Washington is still that proverbial Ed Too Tall Jones. He's probably still better at football than boxing, and he's never shown a lot of improvement to a point where I said this might go somewhere. First 3-4 rounds, when he was throwing that hard jab of his, he absolutely befuddled Deontay Wilder and knocked him on his heels. That was surprising.
Well, let me ask you this.
I actually
thought it would be a three-round fight. Yeah.
Let
me ask you this, because I think that you tweeted this out. I'm not sure. But I think you tweeted out that Seth Mitchell might have had the win over Wilder.
No, that wasn't me. That certainly was not me. Seth Mitchell was another football player that was much better at middle linebacking than he was at boxing. But Gerald Washington, just my opinion, if he faces Anthony Joshua, he does not win a single second of any round, and he probably gets stopped within three. Dave, Jarrett Hurd, to paraphrase Dennis Green, he is who we thought he was, and crown him at least the IBF champion. Listen, I get it. Jarrett Hurd with his style, I think movement and guys that can box from a long distance, circle the ring and be disciplined, are going to give him problems. But, Dave, for 36 minutes, Jarrett Hurd is going to give you mental pressure, and if you stand in the pocket with him, he will carve you up. I really like this kid. I think he's a real craftsman.
I don't know if he's a real craftsman. I just think that the size is always going to make, somebody – it's going to trouble somebody, you know. Wilder, in that case, is always is going to make a case that it's going to be troublesome for him.
I'm talking about Jarrett Hurd. I don't think Deontay Wilder has any real boxing ability. I'm talking about Jarrett Hurd. You know, the other guy, remember him?
Oh, yeah, the middleweight. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, I like him. You know, anytime he gets in there, I mean, he's doing great things and stuff like that. But, you know, Hurd is, here's the thing with Hurd, is that if somebody has distance, right, if anybody has distance, he's gonna, he doesn't know how to walk into it. He doesn't know how to cut the ring. He doesn't know how to do things that, you know, it's going to slip the jab. I mean, I didn't like that. It was bad. What else
Jarrett
you say
about Hurd, it? Here's the issue. He's not good at initiating. He's good at reacting. And I thought Harrison actually shuffled the deck a little bit. But I thought from the fifth round on, as Hurd started to get a little bit more comfortable leading and being the stalker, at the last three, four rounds, you could see what was happening. Harrison was getting very, very fatigued, running out of ideas. And Jarrett Hurd, I think, has real staying power. Now, do I think Arizlande Lara, if he has his legs still, will trouble him? Absolutely. Austin Trout, I'm hearing that that fight is a possibility for the second half of the year. If that fish still has his gills, he's going to give him problems. And certainly, Demetrius Boo-Boo Andrade Day, he gives anyone issues at 154, but anyone else that wants to stay in the pocket with him, I'm just telling you right now, he's going to carve you up, and you're not going to even realize what's happening to you for the first five, six rounds, because the second half of these fights, he's very relaxed, he's steady, and he just grinds you down piece by piece. Dave, Dominic Brazil, Izzy Ogono, would you describe that as a very, very good, bad fight?
Was it good? I don't know. I mean, listen, Dominic Brazil, he is what he is, you know. What I like about the guy that, you know, he was the guy that decided to trade and say, no, I'm not going to go out. It was a good fight. What else are you going to give it to that? You know what I mean? He's not the most, like, you know, guy that's going to be the next heavyweight, right? It's not going to happen.
I think Dominic Brazil might be – his ceiling is probably Alonzo Highsmith. Boxing, again, was not his natural sport. He was a college quarterback. And it's very evident that there's a very limited ceiling. I'll say this, though, for him. He went many more rounds than I figured he would against Anthony Joshua. Again, I thought that was a three-round fight. I think that went seven or eight. Izzy Ogonu, I thought, had better technique. Certainly looked much better at the weigh-in scale. He looked like he's ready for beach season. But, again, there is a size difference, at least 3-4 inches and a pretty good amount of poundage. At the end of the day, Dominic Brazil, what he did well was not fold the tent. And I thought by the second knockdown, maybe this would be it for him. But again, size matters, and he does have a very good ticker. One thing about Brazil, he's shown
he has a size.
He is not a front runner.
Yeah, he has a size, and his size is always going to keep him in the fight. But at the same time, that his size is not going to keep him, you know, risking what we just saw. You know what I mean? He can get hurt. He can get dropped. He can be, you know, you can catch him with overhand rights. You can catch him with left hooks. You can catch him with a jab. The fact of the matter is this, that, you know, the only reason why we're talking about him now is because of what he got past. Right, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Izzy Ogonu is probably a modern-day David Izon. Decent guy. He'll make for some good fights here and there. I don't think he's really a true contender. Dominic Brazil, if you tell me what's his greatest attribute, I'd say he's big. And I don't know if he has the natural athleticism or the instincts or the intangibles to get any better. But it is interesting with Dominic Brazil that this was not the only fight of the night he had. What do you make of the Wilder Brazil situation at the fight hotel? I got to be honest with you, in reading Deontay Wilder's account of things, I find it very hard to believe that Dominic Brazil, after a tough, hard fight, comes to ringside with his family in the backyard of Deontay Wilder, while with his family, his wife and his two infant kids. I have a hard time believing he's instigating anything with Deontay Wilder's team or his brother. Color me suspicious.
Well, here's the thing. You know, Brazil may leaned over the ropes and called out Dante, okay? Steve, we've known fighters to do that. But to take it to the next level, that's just it's insane. You know, when you have guys that want to be thugs or the brother, because, you know, I'm one of those guys right now that's saying that, hey, how much blame can we put on the brother of the champion? We have to put that there, you know? So the fact of the matter is that he said, F your children, F this. Like I said on Twitter, is that you know, he didn't perform like a champion, and he's absolutely not acting like a champion.
I'm interested. All I'm going to say is this: this is not the first time Deontay Wilder has gotten into a fight with another fighter outside a real fight in front of his family.
It's not the first time, too, also, that he's, you know, he was involved in domestic violence either, you know, with his wife.
No, it's not. I don't know what to say at this point. Certain things speak for themselves. I know that they're trying to paint Deontay Wilder as this humble Southern guy, cares about his daughter. I'm not buying that. I'm sorry. You could sell it all you want. I'm not buying it. And I have a hard time believing, and there is footage of this now at the Westin, something happened. Now, again, I want to know what exactly did Dominic Brazil say to anybody that would elicit that type of reaction. And Deontay Wilder can say that I tried to go up to him man-to-man. Then why were there other people around you to begin with? Again, I have a hard time believing that in Alabama, where this is Wilderville, that he's going to instigate anything. It just does not seem that plausible.
Well, like I said, you know, I mean, he called the guy out, maybe, you know, after his hard win, okay? And he leaned over the ropes, and he said something to Dante Wilder's family, okay? Now, that might have ignited it, you know, get the spark, but it wasn't enough. You just don't do things like that. You know, he should have done the proper, you know, Dante Wilder should have done the proper things of going, hey, man, I'm going to do it in a press conference. or you know, and whatever case. But to go after him at the hotel in front of his children, making his kids go into a bathroom and making his wife go into something different, asking him, don't do this here. That was wrong.
Well,
that
and
was
then
all about.
When, according to Christina Brazil, the wife, when she pleaded with Wilder to not do this in front of their kids, I'll go with the R-rated version. According to her, Deontay Wilder said, fuck your kids. Anyway, now moving on. Dave, in talking to Bob Arum earlier this morning, while Manny Pacquiao and Mike Conn are announcing that they have a fight April 23rd in the Middle East against Amir Khan, Bob Arum says the fight is not finalized and he's not announcing it at all. I guess Mike Conn is coming in tomorrow. Again, Dave, I asked this what I asked last week. Are they on the same page?
Absolutely not. I don't think anybody with two, you know, with a brain knows that they're not on the same page at all. So, there we go.
Yeah, and Conn, Manny Pacquiao. Yeah, I guess it's an upgrade from Jeff Horn. Here's my question. Do you have any interest in this fight as a boxing fan?
Well, do they have any interest for, you know, Horn? Absolutely not. But do I have more interest with Conn? It's very little in terms of with Manny Pacquiao. As a fan, I mean, I'm looking at it like this way. Well, if this is what you're going to give me as a farewell, let's take it. Like, in the fact of Marquez versus Cotto, I'll take it. Other than that,
this is a money grab by Manny. There's no doubt about it. They are trying to extract every last dollar they can. And if they got $50 more in Antarctica, Manny Pacquiao would be boxing on an iceberg. There's no doubt about it. They have a very limited time frame here. They're saying, all right, we got 12 to 16 months. And if we're not going to get $20 million a pop like we used to, we absolutely will do anything we have to make sure we get close to that amount. So, again, but here's another issue, Dave. We are 7 weeks from April 23rd. There's been no press conference. Neither fighter's really in a full training camp. Freddie Roach doesn't even know what's going on. I wouldn't be surprised if Manny Pacquiao's return or his 2017 debut was backed up a few weeks. And we do have a big fight this Saturday from London, which is really turning into a grudge match, and I hope they're not putting us on here. Tony Bellew against David Haye. Dave, is Tony Bellew just simply too small to really compete with the real heavyweight?
I'm not sure about that. But I tell you this right now. Because of the fact that, you know, Tony Bellew is and supposedly there's an investigation, right, with David Haye. I think that's a big issue right now. Because what's going on with Deontay Wilder, you know, I think a lot of people are putting those two together and stuff right now. But I got to tell you this. I like when there's guys that have genuine bad blood, Steve. Am I wrong for that?
No, and that's what makes it a real fight. And there's certainly a lot of traction. And this is your typical British big fight. There's already a lot of passion. People are lining up. The press conference today was very, very heated. Eddie Hearn seems to have another winner on his hands. I'm going to go with the chalk, though. I think size matters. I think David Haye is just simply too big, strong, and powerful for Tony Bellew. That's just, again, a gut feel. The other issue, though, is David Haye has fought nothing but absolute dead bodies since returning to the ring. I don't know what he brings to the table in 2017.
Well, I mean, he's been talking about going to heavyweight, you know, division. He said that Tony Bell was like, you know what, this is a guy that was talking a lot of crap, and I'm going to just, you know, bring him in. You know what I mean? The fact that this guy was talking this, I'm deciding I'm going to take him that. So I want to fight him. It's the fans, you know, whether or not you want to see it. I want to see it. I'm not sure if you want to see it, but I'm sure I want to see it, or the fans. Do they want to see this fight happen?
Well, they certainly do in Britain. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's go to the Twitter timeline. Again, if you want to jump in there, at SteveUCNLive. Here's one, of course, from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. How would you rank these heavyweights? Wilder, Ortiz, Joshua, Parker, Vlad, Fury, and Usyk if he moved up. Huh, well, just, again, going by the eye test and the assumption, I will put Joshua 1. I would probably go Ortiz 2, Parker 3, and then Vlad. But again, I don't know, but you know what? That's an assumption based on what I think he might bring to the table April 29th, and also, a lot of respect for his overall career accomplishments, which, quite frankly, though, don't really mean all that much in present time. So I will certainly take that with a grain of salt. But if you were to tell me who is the best heavyweight in the world right now, the one that you would buy the most stock in, I don't think there's any doubt, David. It has to be Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, I mean, he's more talented than anybody else. I mean, I've had people question me about that. You know, saying, well, you know, you're looking at his Olympian or whatever the, you know, thing is. But, I mean, look at the accomplishments, you know, what he's accomplished. So, what can I say about that? I mean, you have to look at certain things.
Here's a tweet from Joshua. Is Oscar Valdez, Miguel Madariaga set, and what's the latest for Crawford moving up? Crawford moving up to 147 for a fight or two. I think that's been floated out there as they look for a dance partner on May 20th. I don't think that is set in stone or written down in permanent ink. And as for Valdez, who is the WBO featherweight champion, the organization has stated Miguel Madariaga must be next. He is the mandatory challenger, and I believe he will be facing him April 22nd at the StubHub Center in Carson. Bob Arum did tell me today that card will move on, that it'll absolutely happen, and Jesse Magdaleno will be on the card, also Zerto Ramirez, and probably a cadre of other prospects under the top-ranked banner. Here's one from three-piece boxing, Jimmy's Corner. He said, Wilder is like most PBC fighters, in my opinion, mistaking wealth for professional success. No argument there. And let me see. Here's one from Rob Raymond. This is the truth. At Bronze Bomber, Deontay Wilder has some of the worst footwork I've seen. He's going to get sparked by Anthony Joshua if they meet up. If you want to call us, 347-215-7598. We're here for at least another 52 minutes and go all the way up to 9 p.m. Give us your thoughts on Thurman Garcia, which takes place from the Barclays Center this Saturday night on CBS. Dave, let's go to the phone lines.
Let's go with area code 585 right now. You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. It's Jake from Rochester.
Jake, what's going on?
What's up, Steve?
Nothing. Talk to me.
Thurman Garcia, I think this is the end of the line in terms of Garcia being, I don't know, I guess saying end of the line is too soon, but I don't see him getting past this level ever again. I think Thurman's going to beat him. I think he's got too many tools in his belt, and he's just plainly the better fighter. But, I mean, Garcia just keeps winning. Even when you don't think he's supposed
even
to win.
Even when he doesn't?
even when he doesn't, yeah.
Jake, so, just my opinion, and I've stated this in the past, I think he has at least two, if not three, losses. I thought Lamont Peterson got him, and I certainly thought that Ashley Theophane outpointed him. And there's one other fight that escapes my mind where I said to myself, I don't think he won that fight.
Mauricio Herrera?
That's the one. Bingo.
I thought he actually won the Peterson fight. Peterson dominated the last like five rounds or something, like really, really beat the shit out of him. But Peterson started so slowly. Like, I felt Peterson gave away like five of the first six rounds. It was just a too big of a hole on my scorecard for him to come back from, because he just didn't do very much early.
Hmm.
I mean, how did you see that fight, Steve?
I've said this before. I remember telling Gabe when that fight happened that Monday. I said if Lamont Peterson's name was Mayweather or Rigondo with the way he boxed, he wouldn't have been down 5-1. He would have been up 6-0. I think there's a perception that aids certain guys in stinking out the joint. And again, I was not happy with the way Lamont Peterson tactically boxed in the first half of that fight. But again, if the other guy is not touching you at all, and Danny Garcia was stuck in mud for much of that night and he simply could not cut off the ring, it was interesting. Why did Danny Garcia win the majority of those early rounds where really nothing was happening between either men? I found that interesting.
I'd like to get your take on, out of all these new Olympic prospects that have signed with promoters, who do you think has the brightest future? Like Stevenson, Lopez, or Conlon, or any of these guys?
Well, I think Conlon certainly has a certain built-in marketability, which I think will be exploited very well by Top Rank beginning on March 17th, St. Paddy's Day at the theater. I think he has a lot of traction to begin with. Shakur Stevenson certainly has a lot of talent. I wonder about his durability and his chin. How well does he catch? I saw Teofimo Lopez on Friday. Certainly has a lot of skills. The kid that I want to see is the one that Richard Schaefer signed with Ringstar, Kiko Balderas. A lot of people told me coming out of the Olympics, it was their belief that he had the best combination of ability and marketability of any of the U.S. Olympians. But again, until you see them face live bullets and then be in actual real fights, we really don't know much about any of these kids.
No, we don't. So let's go on our next caller right now. 423. What's on your mind? You're on live right now on the next round.
Hey, fellas. It's Matt in Winston-Salem. How you doing?
Matt, welcome aboard. What's up?
Hey, guys. Yeah, just a couple of thoughts. The this Con Pacquiao thing, I never thought it would – I thought that was going to be a really good fight, I guess, a few years ago. I guess my thing is now I'm really not picky about fights except when they're pay-per-view. Like, if this were just an HBO card, it'd be fantastic. But, like, HBO puts on good fights, but, I mean, like, half their cards are pay-per-view now, and they have the biggest names, I think. But when you have to pay $70 on top of everything to see Amir Khan, who just got smoked by Canelo, and an old Manny Pacquiao, it's like, I don't want to do that. I'd have to be like at least 4 or 5 beers in to hit that pay button on Saturday night, you know?
Yeah, you know, here's the issue that I have when HBO officials tell me, Steve, look at our schedule. And I said, yeah, when you start sending me $75 monthly vouchers, I'll give you credit for that schedule. And let's be honest about Amir Khan. He is becoming a more reliable version of James Kirkland. He's the guy that's there for a reason, recognizable name, also very vulnerable. And listen, I don't know how much more of a chance he has against Manny Pacquiao than he did Saul Alvarez, although there won't be that humongous size advantage. So that changes things. But Amir Khan literally has not fought since Cinco de Mayo weekend of last year.
Yeah. I don't really get it. It's like these fights that are on pay-per-view, like Canelo, a lot of the Canelo fights, they're like sort of oddball fights, you know, against Khan and against Liam Smith. It's like, and now Chavez, it's like, what is this? Like, so by comparison, when Golovkin fought Kell Brook, I really didn't mind, even though I knew, you know, everyone pretty much knew Golovkin was going to beat him up because he's a lot bigger and a really good fighter. But it wasn't pay-per-view, so I didn't give a shit. I sat there and I watched, you know, intently, and I enjoyed it. It was a fun night, just because I didn't have to pay
above
my cable bill.
As it relates to Manny Pacquiao, hasn't he overstayed his welcome? Honestly.
Hell yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Question.
It's not a meaningful fight anymore, you know? If Pacquiao fought a Kell Brook or a Errol Spence or any of those guys, I'd be up for that. But Amir Khan is not. I mean, he thinks he's a superstar and he's a name. And it will probably be a fun fight. I do expect that it will be a fun fight, but I'm not going to buy it. You know,
so what's
it's
a
just
fun
not
fight,
a big
though?
Welterweight fight.
Let me ask you
I'm
this.
Sorry?
What's the fun of fight, though? So if he was a fight, Amir Khan or Jeff Horn or anybody else, what's the fun of fight? The guy that you don't really know much about or the guy you know much about and can get KO'd?
I mean, if it's just between those two, I'm happy it's Khan. But, I mean, I didn't want to see Jeff Horn get a pay-per-view fight against
Yeah,
Pacquiao.
I mean, again... Matt, that's like saying, what would you rather have, gonorrhea or syphilis? Well,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure both have their strong points, but they're both venereal diseases. You don't want either, you know?
I don't want either, Steve.
Yeah.
I don't want it. You know, I'd rather have corona than Zima, you know?
Yeah, Dave can tell you.
No, I can't tell you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, that's off my chest. Hey, I got one other thing for you. So, question. So, Wilder, I think everyone agrees he looks sloppy as hell Saturday. What do you recommend for him, like, in terms of training or switching up something? If you could pick a trainer for him to go to and be like, look, I'm, you know, my problems, I'm not a great Wilder. How do you fix him at this point?
Trainer for Deontay Wilder.
Wow,
that's
interesting.
I don't
even know who his trainer is, you know?
No, it's JD's, assisted by Mark Breland. I just really wonder, being in Alabama, which is not exactly Philadelphia or L.A. or the Maryland-Baltimore area in terms of the gym scene, is it getting the proper type of work on a daily basis? I have my doubts about that.
Yeah,
I mean
you have to.
You can't correct something like that. I mean, I think it comes down to, does he want to correct it? Does he want to correct it? Because, the fact is that he thinks that he's the, he is a heavyweight champion of the world right now, right? And he's acting in a certain way that he believes like that, but at the same time that he may not like the repercussions of what's coming at him. He's not pretending like he is. He's not fighting like he is. And certainly fight fans do not like the way he is pretending. I mean, nobody likes it.
You mean he's not like,
I don't like it.
Like he's not enjoying himself in there or.
I don't know if he's enjoying it, but you know what, man? You know, when you're coming at somebody, not coming at somebody, but when you're after your fight, and the fight after what you performed is more exciting with TMZ and a podcast right now is talking about more than that. There's a problem. Absolutely, there's a big problem with it. Do you agree?
I mean. The whatever happened Saturday night, I didn't read into the details, but it was apparently pretty fucked up. So
yeah, Matt, thanks for the call. We got to run. 347-215-7598. Dave, who's next?
Let's go with the every code 585. You're on live right now on the next round.
You already got to me. This is Jake. I'm still listening. This is Jake.
Oh, Jake. Well, keep listening, Jake. Keep listening.
All right.
Let's go with .805 right now. You're on live right now in the next round.
Hey, guys. What's up? It's me, Nacho.
Nacho, welcome aboard. What can we do for you?
Thanks. Well, as far as this weekend's fight, first off, let me start with the one in England. I thought that Ray Vargas was going to win that fight. Kevin McDonald put up, he presented somewhat of a challenge. But, man, it's a good thing Vargas had two American judges give him that fight because the fact that one of the judges was Ian John Lewis, he had the utter audacity to score that fight a draw when it was clearly 9-3 for Vargas, and even their own broadcasters said that he clearly won the fight. It was unbelievable.
Lewis is a hired gun, okay? And he really is the British version of Dalby Shirley or Lisa Giampa. And those cards, in my opinion, he's just doing his job. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I guess so. Apparently Eddie Hearn paid him enough to do it. And then the the other fights on the PBC card, the first fight between Ngozu and Brazil was ridiculous. Like, yeah, that fight was insane how both guys were able to hurt each other and basically, you know, tee off on each other at different points. But, I mean, Steve, I know you did a article on his trainer, Manuel Robles. How the hell does he allow this dude to show up looking like he hadn't trained for like 6 months?
You know, they're heavyweights. Again, it's not a great look for Manuel Robles, but at the end of the day, the fighter himself has to get up in the morning and hit the pavement. And the fighter is the one that has to lock his refrigerator at night and to not eat anything past. I mean, listen, there's a certain point, and heavyweights are very, very strange in that sense. They don't theoretically have a weight limit, but I do not disagree. He was at least, I would say, 15 pounds overweight.
Here's the thing, though. The guy was able to get out of danger. So there's got to be some credit. You know what I mean? The guy was able to get out of danger and stuff like that. So let's give him some credit of what he was able to accomplish, right?
True, but at the same time, I think he didn't give himself the best opportunity to show up in shape, is what I'm saying. Like, yeah, he won, but it could have legitimately cost him also. So that's kind of the give and take of showing up looking like you hadn't basically been training. So that was really the only point I was bringing up.
I know, but for Rubio's part, like that, you know what I mean? If he was training with him, and let's just say that he wasn't doing everything that Rubio was saying, I think it's unfair to say that, you know, he wasn't training. I think he was there. I think he proved it. He was there. He was hurt, and he turned it up to the point where he was, you know, he got the win. So let's give him that credit, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And then with the other fight, Tony Harrison, I don't know what the hell is wrong with that dude, but it literally seems like instead of making the fight as easy as possible for himself, he always likes to basically tease you with the fact that he's not going to go the entire distance as far as boxing. He always likes to trade with guys when he doesn't have to, and once again, it ended up coming back to haunt him because he got knocked out by Hurd, who I thought he completely had outboxed Hurd up until about round 8. And then at that point, he just fell apart again, which I don't understand.
Well,
he is what he is.
Let me just tell you something. He's not a durable fighter. And one thing I'll never forget, I'm at Big Bear about 3 years ago, and he was in the camp at the summit with Abel Sanchez. And when he sparred Gennady Golovkin, I remember Golovkin not even trying to hit him above the chest. And it was almost like I would describe it as kid gloves treatment. And we saw it with Willie Nelson, and it bore out again this past weekend. He doesn't catch very well, and he's not very durable.
Yeah, for sure. And with the last fight, Wilder, he's so lucky that Gerald Washington really doesn't know how to fight because he looked completely petrified and he looked awful and tentative in those first 4 rounds up until the 5th round when he finally decided that he was no longer going to stare at him and then finally decided to throw a punch, and he actually was able to hit him with a right hand. But, man, talk about a guy who legitimately is as a bad of a paper champion as you can get. If he fights Joseph Parker, I hope Joseph Parker takes that belt away from him because that guy is one of the worst heavyweights I've ever seen. Like, he legitimately looks like a guy who basically has no amateur experience, and they've just spoon-fed him 38 guys in a row and he has power, but his boxing skills are just awful. So I would favor almost anybody else to beat him if they got him in the ring. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets that Parker fight or if he's forced to fight
Stavern again. WBC has mandated for some reason, and this is one of those things I completely disagree with, Bermain Stavern should not be the mandatory. I'm sorry. I have no sympathy for his plight, but I guess being with Don King still has its perks. Nacho, real quickly before he let you go, Garcia or Thurman?
God, I've been going back and forth about this. I just have a feeling that fucking Danny Garcia is going to find a way to win this fight. I don't know what it is, but he seems to just kind of, when the occasion calls for it, he just seems to find a way to pull it out. And there's just something that tells me he's gonna find a way to win a decision. He's not going to stop Thurman, and Thurman's not going to stop him. But honestly, I just think Thurman has looked, he hasn't looked all that great in the last year or two. And I think a lot of that has to do with he's been fighting at welterweight for years. And I'm kind of wondering if it's not taking something out of him still staying at 47 as long as he has. But that said, I think Garcia wins the decision.
All right, Nacho, thank you very much. 347-215-7598. If you want to send in a tweet, you could do so at SteveUCNLive. We still have fight review, fight preview, and some news and notes. Dave?
Steve, I got to ask you. I mean, really quick, because of the fact that, you know, Stavern is saying that he's the mandatory. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, he lost clearly. And why would we want to be interested in that fight?
No, you probably wouldn't be. And I groan. Listen, I'm someone who defends the sanctioning bodies. I think they absolutely have their place. I think in many respects they are needed. But they are not perfect. And the system is not perfect. And unfortunately, we are stuck with that pile of hot sack of garbage. Let's go back to the phone lines.
Eric code 559, you're online right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
No, I'm just listening, fellas.
Okay, thank you very much. Who's next?
Eric code 347, you're online right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Just listening, guys.
All right, thank you very much.
Ooh, okay, let's go back to the top of the lines here then. Area code 787. You're live right now. Go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Javier, welcome aboard.
You know, guys, you talked earlier about Garcia's dad. You know what he has really done? He people don't like Garcia here in Puerto Rico anymore. When he first started, people were like, it doesn't matter that he was going to Philadelphia, he's a great champ. But then he fought here at Herrera, and people were satisfied with the result.
Hold on. I still remember Showtime and everybody trying to make that into a homecoming, and then it turned out that Danny Garcia speaks about as much Spanish as I do. That was not WEPA. Then he got his head jabbed off by Herrera.
And now, with Garcia's father talking that much trash, everybody's saying, like, we really hate this guy. Yeah? I talk like a bunch of friends of mine. Nobody's picking Garcia here.
Why, though, Jose? I mean, let me ask you this. Why they hate this kid here?
Well, they don't hate him, but his father has made it like he's always talking, and people feel like, hey, you shouldn't be denigrating the other people. Puerto Ricans, because of their political situation, had enough problems. So if you start calling people names and other people.
So let me ask you this. He's not making a case to the fact that, you know what, Puerto Ricans haven't had a tough time. Not, you know, because of the fact that most Americans don't look at them as, you know, Puerto Rican born people as American citizens. So his dad shouldn't make that case. I mean, I don't think that he should make that case, but I think it's made it very bad. But are you saying that that's part of the reason?
Yeah, I believe he started insulting people, and we don't like that. We Puerto Ricans are known because they like to fight. But when you start trash talking them, that's the reason everybody Conor wasn't well back here. Everybody wanted to see him kiss Mayweather's ass because everybody hated Mayweather because he talked so much trash. So, I don't know. People here in Puerto Rico, nobody is really excited about the fight. And the most folks I talk, everybody's picking Thurman, to be quite honest with you.
Well, I think another issue, though, is Danny Garcia is of Puerto Rican descent, but he grew up in Philadelphia, not San Juan. And there's a difference. And I saw this with Filipino fighters. It's certainly the case with Mexicans. You could be Mexican-American, right? But you'll never be as popular as, let's say, a Chavez or a Barrera or a Morales who are, quote-unquote, Mexican-Mexican. There is that cultural barrier that does exist within each race or each culture, for lack of a better term.
That's not true.
I do it
because you know what? When Fernando Vargas, who's not a Mexican, he's a Mexican American. There was a lot of Mexican people that supported him. I was not one of them. And I got into the sport was like my grandfather, like, who loved the sport. Right now, I mean, when he loved the sport, was that he's one of those traditional guys that believed that you know what? If you're Hispanic, you just don't say anything and you do things by your hands. So I think that's the leverage of what. Go ahead.
You know, Steve, I agree with you a little bit, but I remember when he beat Judah, there were 11,000 when he fought Herrera here. So people actually like it. In Puerto Rico, if you put a good fight, people will go. But I remember there were 11,000, and after that fight, people kind of say, well, maybe he's not what he used to be. And to be quite honest, he hasn't looked that great since. The last time he looked that great, whenever he was, when he beat Lucas Matiz, I thought he lost to Lamont Peterson. I don't think he has enough tools to beat Thurman. And
I think his dad, though. You know, I think his dad's ruined that. Because, you know, if you look like Tito Trinidad, okay, there was a lot of Mexican people that was behind him. If you look at Miguel Cotto, I mean, right now, there's not a lot of people that care about what he does next. But the fact of the matter is this, that we like, as Latinos, we like people that fight. Angel Garcia, we don't like that. You know, we don't like a lot of people that talk too much, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think the content. I don't think it's the quantity of what he says. It's the content. And let me just tell you, if Angel Garcia was Korean and he was saying that stuff, I'd be embarrassed. I would be.
Standards. Two more things, guys. First of all, when you guys talk about the prospects, that different promoter has signed. I know he hasn't fought yet, and we have to wait. But because Verdejo probably is not what it used to be, everybody will be excited about Jaber Cintron. He fought in two Olympics. He almost won a medal in 2012 at 17 years old. And people in Puerto Rico, we want to embrace somebody. Just look for him because I believe he can.
Anybody that wants to embrace somebody right now is Steve Kim. You know, if you want to have somebody that's gonna trail off of what you're gonna say, anything, you know, is Steve Kim. I mean, here. I don't think anybody wants to go off and say, hey, man, this is not the thing you should say. Absolutely not. We shouldn't do that, right?
And Javier, your last point.
And one more thing going to Canaan. and Pacquiao. I know he's not done, but if it actually happened, though you guys got considering the current state of politics, that's kind of a danger to go to that fight for American
I've said that from the beginning. I'm not in any rush to go there. People could say it's the nice part of the Middle East. Again, go ahead. I'll from the safety of my couch, I will watch it and be more than happy. Good luck.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Javier, we got to run. Thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Anyone else on the phone lines here?
Yes. Area code 111, you're on right now on the next round.
Hello, Steve and Dave. It's Ringside
Robbie. What's going on?
Robbie.
Not much. I've got a lot to cover, and I'll try to get it all in. First of all, with Garcia Thurman, I think Danny will win a split decision. He always finds a way, and I agree with your three possible losses, Steve. I couldn't agree more. I don't think anything is going to happen to Angel Garcia in regards to the New York State Athletic Commission because they're not going to interfere with this fight. So,
right.
Garcia wins a split decision over Thurman. I am very much interested in the Pacquiao-Khan fight. I think Amir Khan will end the career of Manny Pacquiao if that fight takes place.
Ooh.
Because I think Khan still has more left in the tank than Pacquiao does. So if Arum and company want to have a money grab and take Manny Pacquiao on this retirement tour, I think he ends his career if he steps in the ring with Khan. I think Khan has more left than Pacquiao does.
Yeah, well, he definitely caught. Steve Kim's here. So, Steve.
So, as far as the heavyweights, Anthony Joshua will beat Wilder with his hands tied behind his back. Deontay Wilder is the worst heavyweight champion I've seen, and I can't even remember when. You're supposed to improve when you have a title. He's gotten worse. And the only reason why WBC is making Burmeister Vern the number one contender is they want him to hang on to that title a little bit longer. I think Wilder would beat Parker, but beyond that, I think Wilder would lose to almost any heavyweight that you put him in against. He looked absolutely pathetic on Saturday night. And it's also, you talked about it with Big Baby Steve. Weight is definitely a problem. And I got a problem with Dominic Brazil. When two fights ago he weighed 218, and Saturday night he stepped in the ring weighing 263. To me that is a very serious problem. When he fought Joshua, he weighed 243. He looked in very good shape. Hello?
No, we can hear you. What's going on?
Oh, I thought I got cut off, Dave. Sorry about that.
No.
I think that's a real issue, and I feel bad for his trainer because I know the trainer can only do so much. And, I think Herd did what he had to do to win, and I think if I was the manager of Tony Harrison, I would evaluate his career. Those are my thoughts on those.
I don't disagree. I think Tony Harrison, if there were professional titles to be won in 6-round fights, he might have a future at the world-class level. Unfortunately, fights are twice as long. Robbie, thank you for the call.
You're welcome. We'll see you next week.
Let's go to the fight review. There's a lot of stuff that took place this past weekend. Dave, Saul Rodriguez, this is a kid that I've been high on. I thought he got a bit of a gift against Oscar Bravo. This is what happens when you spoil a guy. I think Mayweather, with the lifestyle that he flashed, I think absolutely seduced and corrupted this young man. Saul Rodriguez got lucky on Friday night.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to say lucky, but the fact of the matter is this, that, when it comes to being a play with anybody else, you know, and it's terrible, you know. And Fight fans are not, they're not stupid. They're going to do what they want to do. They're going to say what they want to say. And then we have to sit back and we got to say, okay, well, you know, this is what we got to do. You know, this is what he got to say. It's terrible.
Yeah. Also on this card, Justin DeLoach continues his rise, stopping Chris Pearson in two. Then Andrew Tabidi with a six-round stoppage over Quintus Graves. Also from Canada, Elidir Alvarez, I think, ended the career of Lucien Bouté, stopping him in five. And now Alvarez could be headed for a title shot with WBC light heavyweight champion Adonis Stevenson. As we talked about earlier, Ray Vargas is your newest Mexican champion. He captures the WBC 122-pound belt, defeating Gavin McDonald, I thought, pretty decisively in England in what was a very, very strong performance. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And if you want to send us a tweet, please do so at SteveUCNLive. And Donovan Kast says, Steve is making it sound like all heavyweights need to lock the fridge at night as if they were Gizmo about to birth a gremlin. That was a great 80s movie, Gremlins. Dave, anyone else on the phone line?
Yeah, let's go. 917. You're alone,
hey,
right now.
Hey, it's the mill, a mill car.
A mill car. Welcome aboard. What's going on?
Well, not much. I actually just got home, unfortunately. I would have liked to listen from the beginning, but I'll check out the full podcast later. How many people have been picking Danny Garcia to win this fight? Have either of you picked him to win this fight?
We both are, believe it or not.
No, I was. I mean, I got to tell you right now, I was. But the fact of the matter is this, okay? He got the Whisper King on his side now. And I'm questioning that. I mean, why break?
Danny Garcia what? Does?
Oh no! He said right now about Daniel Jacobs, right?
No! I'm talking about Danny Garcia against Thurman.
Oh my bad.
Yeah, no. You're talking about Jacobs getting Ward's trainer. I can't remember his name at the top of my head.
Yeah, Virgil Hunter. Who, by the way, Fox Sports, they had a bad night on the graphics when they put that Virgil Hunter trained Gennady Golovkin. I get it. I make typos all the time. I mean, Amilcar, they had a terrible night. I mean, they misspelled Detroit.
Yeah, they had
I
a
don't
worse
know if you
night
saw that or not.
They had a worse night than the Oscars did, to tell you the truth.
They did.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, I'll be honest with you. I've got tickets to go see that fight upstate the following weekend. I've got tickets to go see the fight at the Garden the weekend after that. I didn't get tickets to see this fight in Brooklyn. I know there's a lot of hype around it. I'm not really a fan of Danny Garcia or Thurman, but I don't know.
There's a lot of hype on that, huh?
I haven't been impressed by Danny Garcia's victory since he knocked out Amir Khan. And in retrospect, was that even that impressive? I don't know. I just don't find him a very impressive fighter. I think that Thurman has more than enough skill, definitely more than enough power to handle him. My main concern, if I was in Thurman's corner or in his camp, would be the scorecards. But, you know, I don't understand the business of boxing as well as you do, Steve, but why would the PBC or Al Haymon favor Garcia in this scenario? Is that one of the reasons you think, or are you just basing it off boxing?
Yeah, I'm kind. You know, listen, I love to be the Asian Oliver Stone, and a lot of the times you have to kind of figure out who's higher on the totem pole as it relates to certain promoters and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know. They're both with Haymon. They're both kind of at the same level. Neither guy's a pay-per-view star. But again, does judging matter? Absolutely it does. But I don't know. It's just a gut feel. Like, listen, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Thurman Garcia to me is a battle of two kind of B-plus, A-minus fighters. I'm looking
Agreed.
Forward to it, I guess. But I don't look at this as like – I really don't. I think they're okay fighters. But do I look at these
Agreed.
Two elite guys like some people are going to try to tell you? No, I really don't.
I don't either. And, I mean, look, this might be irrational on my part. You know, maybe I've been spending too much time on YouTube watching the pre-fight stuff. But I'm actually more excited about Hay versus Belu this weekend than I am about Garcia versus Thurman. And even the out-of-the-ring antics have been better for this fight. I mean, it's been some of the most entertaining pre-fight shit I've seen before a fight in a very long time. A very long time.
So here my question is that, Steve, so who should anybody be more excited about? What fight for this month? You know, we're not even getting into the March month, but so what's the most exciting fight?
Well, they're all
fight?
Taking place in March. I mean, the fight I'm
that's what I'm asking. So what is more exciting to you right now in March?
Honestly, anytime Golovkin
most...
fights, I'm excited. He's must see TV to me. He's like the Miami Hurricanes. When he, I don't care if Miami's 3-9. When they play football, I'm there. When Golovkin fights, I think it's great for boxing.
Right.
And we're truly seeing an elite talent. Garcia and Thurman, they're good. I don't think they're anything near great. I know that's going to anger some people for some reason, but I would take my chances with Golovkin going to the Hall of Fame, being considered a much better fighter than those two. Now, matchups matter. Now, Jacobs is probably at the same level, in my opinion, as Garcia and Thurman. Which goes back to my original point, you will see the difference between a great fighter and good fighters.
I know, but there's going to be some people that are going to ask you right now, like, okay, so you're picking Triple G as a Hall of Fame fighter, but how so?
His career. And right now, if he retired right now, I don't think he'd make the Hall of Fame, although, the standards are pretty low. And I was thinking about this, taking away Mayweather and Pacquiao, who basically to me are in semi-retirement. Ask yourself this, who are the fighters right now that if they decided, I've had this religious awakening, I'm never going to fight again, I can't punch people in the face for a living, it's against my God and his edicts.
Right.
The guys that I would say would be first ballot Hall of Famers off the top of my head would be Roman Gonzalez,
Agreed.
Who's still pretty much in his prime. I think Klitschko, but again, he's kind of semi-retired,
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
And I don't know of anyone else, but I think Golovkin is trending towards
that. It's very simple. Gennady Golovkin has already produced a better body of work than Arturo Gatti. Arturo Gatti is in all of the
days. Poor Arturo. So, hey, Amilcar. It used to be for like 20 years, people would say, this guy has to make the Hall of Fame. He's better than Barry McGuigan. And then soon as Gatti got in, then Gatti became the low bar. I'm like, poor guy, man.
Jim Lampley has the Gatti list. You know, anytime I hear somebody shit on Gennady Golovkin, look, it's not just who he's faced. He's faced all of the top middleweights he could possibly face. But he's not only faced them, he's absolutely destroyed them. Absolutely destroyed them.
Yeah, Dave, the same guys that were going life and death with Sergio Martinez, he's just toying with them. He is. It's the truth. I mean, but I still think Gennady needs to put in another year or two of solid work. Okay, this is not going to be a popular opinion with anybody. But if he retired right now, Andre Ward, I think, would make the Hall of Fame. I think Sergey Kovalev would make the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Who else? And that's about it. Right now, the guys I think absolutely for sure, beyond Pacquiao and Mayweather, make the Hall of Fame. And I think, to me, the proof's in the pudding. There's going to be some buzz for Garcia Thurman. There is. I think there'll be much more buzz for Golovkin. Jacobs.
Okay. Let's go with area code 801. You're on right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
I'm just
got a question for Kim. So, he's 47 besides Pacquiao.
Excuse me?
So, well, you said that the Garcia-Thurman fight is not elite fight, right? Am I mistaking? Is that what you said?
I think it's a battle between two B plus A minus fighters. Yes.
So who, in your opinion, is a or A plus fighter at 147 besides Pacquiao and Mayweather?
I don't know if there really is one, to be honest with you. I kind of look. I'm projecting. I think Errol Spence could be. I've been a big fan of Kell Brook. But, again, if you were to ask me, Steve, do you think Keith Thurman or Danny Garcia is truly a great fighter? Honestly, I would say no. I think they're very good, by today's standards. But, I mean, again, and I don't want to be the old guy telling people that, hey, when I used to go to school, I walked 5 miles in the snow. I don't think either guy's as good as Oba Carr.
Right.
Oh, wow.
No.
Do you agree or disagree?
I guess I would have to agree, but I do agree that it's probably the best fight to be made at 147 besides the Brook and Spence fight, but I think I'm more excited to see this fight than I am that fight. And the other point I was going to make, you don't think Marquez is a Hall of Famer?
You know what? When you're almost 40 years old and you haven't fought in 2 years, you're kind of semi-retired too, because he's certainly, there's no doubt, he's going to Canastota. He's first ballot. But again, don't you consider him more or less retired, though, at this point? I guess not. He didn't answer the question.
I guess not. He dropped out of the conversation.
Another guy that I think is trending towards the Hall of Fame, I mean, again, he's got to put in more work, Terrence Crawford, certainly. I believe that Mikey Garcia is trending towards the Hall of Fame, I think. But again, a lot more work needs to be done. I think that's about it. Just kind of looking at some of the names here.
Seriously, you think that Mikey Garcia is one of those guys right now, huh?
What I'm saying is he's trending towards that level. If there's a lot of work for him to do at 35, but if he's as good as I think he is, I think Mikey Garcia. But again, you have to fight the fights.
That's what I've been going with, so since you mentioned that, like, in what reason? Because, like, there's most fans that think that you're trying to favor certain fighters, right?
I don't know what you mean by that. I mean, do I have a higher opinion of certain fighters than others? Yeah, I do. Like, I think LeBron James is a better basketball player than D'Angelo Russell. Is that favoring him, or is that just kind of knowing what I'm looking at?
I don't know. I'm just asking you. Here, let's go with area code 510 right now. You're 510. You're on live right now on the next round. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, Dave? What's up, Steve? It's Fernando from Richmond. How you guys doing?
Fernando, what's going on?
Hey, first of all, start off with the Garcia
Thurman.
Where the other guy? Yeah, I can tell
you're very excited about that fight.
I'm not. I'm just like you, man. I think you give him too much credit, man. They're both like B minus fighters, man. They're like, you know,
they wouldn't say B minus. They're at least B plus.
Right.
That wouldn't go that far either. Jeez. Well, Fernando, I would hate to have been a student in your class with that grading curve. Jeez.
Right. You know. Okay.
Well, I'm just not excited about him. I'm not like you. I'm not really excited about him. I think Dane Garcia is going to win. It's going to be similar to the fight he had against my memory is all messed up. Anyway, forget about that. I have a question. Any updates on Kovalev and his situation? You know, I don't think he gets in the ring soon.
They're kind of sort of beginning to talk Rock Nation Sports and Main Events. June 17th is the stated date for the rematch. They're at least talking, but I think they are still very, very far from consummating this rematch, which is strange given the fact that there was a rematch clause with all the terms that were already in place. But I get the sense Rock Nation believes, hey, we're the champions. We won the first fight, or in quotes, won the first fight. And they feel as though they should have more control. And what I'm being told is Sergey Kovalev is telling Main Events, damn it, I want my belts back. Bend if you have to.
In other words, it's not going to happen. Andre Ward is saying, you know what? I don't like the way the media is treating me. I don't like the way that Steve Kim has treated me. So it's not going to happen. That's the escape. That's what's going to happen, right, Steve?
Well, it wouldn't be the worst thing if Andre Ward would promise that he retired and never fought again in lieu of not doing the rematch. I would be like, okay, bye. That's just my opinion, though.
All right.
Anything else, Fernando? I guess not. 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a tweet, please do so, at Steve UCN Live. Dave, who's next?
Well, there's nobody right now next and all of that. So,
okay, good. Well, let's go to the fight preview. There is some stuff going on. This Thursday from Japan, Shinsuke Yamanaka takes on Carlos Carson for the WBC Bantamweight title. And really, actually, that's it. It is the CBS card. Going through the rankings again, who I think is headed towards the Hall of Fame eventually? Dave, you think Orlando Salido simply has too many losses to get real consideration when he's done?
I don't think so. I mean, you know what? You know, the thing is that most people focus on the losses, and nobody focuses on the wins. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. And a lot of those losses came early in his career when he didn't even know how to fight. I think the back half of his career, especially the last 6-7 years, has been very good. And he's been involved in multiple Fight of the Year candidates. He's won major titles. He has some notable victories on his ledger, and he's not finished yet. He's going to be very interesting when the voting process starts for him. What's going to hold him back is the guys that really don't study this and just say, hey, he's got 13, 14 losses, that's going to hurt him. But again, if you examine how his career was formulated and how he got to this point, I think that he will get some consideration. But again, let's see how he finishes out his career. Another guy I think is trending towards the Hall of Fame is Naoyu Inoue, the Japanese guy. Even though he doesn't have a lot of fights,
right,
you know, he's been on a very, very quick track in terms of the quality of fights that he's had. Oh, I know a guy that I would put money on would eventually be a Hall of Famer, and I overlooked him for some reason. Dave, how about Vasyl Lomachenko?
Ooh. Yes. You know, a tough guy, gritty. At the same time, here's the question I have to ask for you really quick before I answer that. Steve, the one thing that I've wondered is because of the fact that most people are questioning right now about American fighters, about the fact that we should bypass about what they do, do you think, like myself, should we allow them to be who they want to be? Does that make sense?
No. Can you rephrase that question? That's completely confusing to me.
Okay. So, in other words, what I'm saying is that, you know, you have heavyweights, like right now, you know, Dante, that wants to be a thug, right?
Deontay Wilder, I don't know if he wants to be a thug, but they've certainly tried to market him as this good old Southern guy, that, you know, and I think there's enough body of evidence to suggest that simply isn't true.
Well, it's not. It's not true. But at the same time, that should we accept it? Should we like be the people that go, oh man, well, you know what? Let it be, because the fact of the matter is that we're looking for a heavyweight that's an American. So let it bypass.
Let it slide. So in other words, because he's American, we should be jingoistic about this.
Yes.
And let them act any way they want. No, I'm not doing that. Let other people do that. I'll stick to kind of telling the truth here, Dave. Honestly,
so you're
an axe murderer. You're an axe murderer. or the geography does not mean that much to me. I'll be honest with you.
So you're being a hater. Is that what you're saying? You're going
to
be a hater?
I'd like to think that I'm doing my job. 347-215-7598. Dave, if we don't have any more calls, I think we could just call it a night. Is there anyone that has jumped in late?
No. Let's call it a night.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. On behalf of David Duenas, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.
Good night.